The 4th, 1986, Marcia Ripp for National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, continuing our interview with Ann Albert.
Thank you.
Mrs. Albert, you were talking about your parents receiving flowers that you gave them on Yom Kippur in the synagogue. And we wondered if you could tell us a little more about this. Was it a custom of the country?
Yes, it was a custom of the country. The children usually were not present at the complete time of the services. Became visiting in the afternoon, and especially when the Kaddish was said, the children had to leave. We played in the garden after synagogue. And actually, when I went to school, into religious school, I was not taught the Kaddish. Children were not, whose parents were living, were not taught the Kaddish.
Did you get any religious instruction at home or at your grandparents' home?
Well, the instruction that I received wasn't really in any of the scientific or scholarly way. It was the practice of living. It was keeping the holidays in a moderate way, and learning parts of the Jewish language or the Hebrew words thrown in with the German language that gave a certain atmosphere to the parents' attitude to your learning.
Do you recall any Jewish symbols or things like mezuzahs or books in your parents' home or in your grandparents' home?
Well, there were not mezuzahs at the doors outside, because the Jewish population tried not to be very obvious, or we tried to just merge with the general population. But I know that my parents had prayer books. I remember my mother had a whole shelf of leather-bound prayer books, in a way you'd have an encyclopedia, that contained in each volume prayers for a certain holiday or for certain occasions. And I remember one book mother had that was edited in 1880 in Prague in German language, called itself Prayer Book for Jewish Women, for Jewish Young Women and Virgins. By the time I had it, it practically fell apart, and I brought it to Dr. Friedhoff in Rosh Shalom Temple, knowing that he was a lover of old books and an excellent bookbinder, to see what he could do with restoration. That's just about all I remember about books.
Do you recall the name of the synagogue that your parents attended, and were they members?
The names of synagogues, I'm sure they existed, but they were not familiar to me. We named the synagogues after their location. And the ones that my parents frequented was in the Müllnergasse, M-U-E-L-L-N-E-R, Gasse. And the membership was not paid individually to synagogues. You paid a tax, the Jewish tax, to your Jewish community of Vienna, which was actually demanded of you according to your income. And that entitled you to join any of the synagogues or any of the services.
Did you attend Sunday school or any other classes at the synagogue?
Well, there was not the habit of Sunday school, since religious instruction was obligatory in the school system. We had two periods a week of religion, which were taught by a retired rabbi, usually. Because we were divided into Catholic, Protestant, and Jewish groups. Jewish group, of course, being the smallest, and there were several grades united to form a classroom size.
Now, These grandparents who lived in Leopoldstadt, were they your parents' parents?
Yes, they were my father's parents.
And now, where did your husband's parents live? Your husband-to-be?
My husband-to-be lived also in a mixed neighborhood in the 18th district. My parents and I lived in the 9th district. It was neighboring.
Now, you mentioned on Sundays you would go to your grandparents' house in Leopoldstadt. What do you remember about these Sundays?
These Sundays were a very enjoyable time for me. Being an only child, I grew up among friends and school acquaintances that were not Jewish. I had one Jewish friend with whom I studied. But otherwise, for playmates, I didn't have Jewish playmates. Coming together, getting together with my cousins at my grandfather's house was a great event for me because we were close. We were cousins, we were all Jewish, and it was a special occasion to be in a group, and not for me, not being alone.
Did you stay for dinner?
Well, since the habit was of having dinner at noon and you just had a supper in the evening, each of the families brought their own picnic supper. We had a good time there, spreading all over the apartment.
By the way, it just occurred to me, how did you get to Leopoldstadt?
We walked. My parents and I walked. In decent weather, we walked. And in bad weather, we took the streetcar.
I see. Now, another thing you mentioned was you knew that going to private girls' school was a financial burden to your parents, and I wondered how they managed to pay for this.
Well, I had a scholarship to that school. It would be, I would compare it to something like Ellis School or Winchester Thurston or any of those schools. And I had a scholarship to begin with. And I imagine my parents had to forego some of the luxuries or what. I never was made to feel it, but I knew it. And I had to uphold certain grades, which I easily did.
Now, you also mentioned helping out in your father's store. Was this something you had to do or wanted to do?
I really can't remember the difference. When I had lots of studying to do, I just didn't appear in the store. That was up to me. But when I was available, it was a matter of fact that you helped with your parents.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes, I enjoyed it. I liked to meet the public and be of help, and I had a certain freedom of action there.
And what did you do?
I waited on customers. I finally learned the secret code of marking the merchandise, and I wrapped merchandise. I answered the phone. I made entries in books. I just watched all around.
You mentioned that you were trained to be a guide for the International Youth Conference. Do you recall the year?
I believe it was 1929. And the most interesting thing of that was that I had to undergo a training course for guides. And that's when I really got to know my hometown.
Now, you also mentioned being very involved in political activities in 1934. Do you recall the name of any of the movements of the time, and which was the one? Where were the ones you were involved with?
I was involved with the Social Democratic Student Organization. And they themselves had three divisions. There was the Students of Law, Students of Philosophy, and Students of Medicine. The fourth one, the religion, we sort of didn't take in. And I was involved in that group.
What about the Marxist or the communist groups?
The communist groups were very, very small. The Social Democratic Party, its programs and its proponents took a very reasonable stand, not radical, but appealing to the general population. And the communists therefore gained no power whatsoever. They didn't have a representative in Congress nor in the Senate. And although at that time the Soviet Union was a new kind of animal, new kind of state, only the very, very leftist radical elements that we didn't consider that the high intellectuals were attracted to.
Now, the name of the doctor that signed the affidavit for your admission into the United States?
Dr. Max Wolf, W-O-L-F.
Of New York City?
Of New York City.
And what was the date that you arrived in America?
It was January 8, 1939.
Now, you arrived with $20 between you. How did you manage to live?
Well, the doctor took a hotel room. In New York, downtown New York, on 23rd Street, for 1 week. After that, we were set up in a furnished, rented room on 34th Street, which was horrible. And I don't know how long they paid for us, but then I found a so-called job as babysitter for an autistic child. At that time, not knowing what autism was, but now I know it because a good friend of mine was the founder of the School for Autism, Dr. Bruno Bettelheim. And I tried to work with that child all day while the father, a lawyer, worked in his profession, and the mother went to a school to be taught the treatment of such children. And my husband, my income was so small that we just barely paid the rent, and my husband subsisted on three stale rolls you could buy for a nickel in the morning at Cushman's Bakery in New York.
Now, how good was your English that you were able to work with a child and with parents?
I'm told that it was good because I've had 4 years of it in school, being a talker. I have a certain inclination towards linguistics, language and linguistics, and I could read and explain Shakespeare and Chaucer, but I couldn't converse with the bus driver or the elevator boy.
How long did you remain a babysitter?
Not very long, just a month or so. It wasn't long. Until I was offered a fantastic job, a living job, for $17.50 a week as a cook for a very wealthy family. Now you can check if I say the truth, if I say the truth. And I remained there for 13 months, and the family employed beside me a butler and a maid, which I'm sure were Nazis, although my employer, Mrs. Youngquist, didn't believe it. By the way, in parentheses, they had a very bad conscience toward me, because when I came home Thursday night after my half day off, the refrigerator was cleaned, the floor was scrubbed and freshly waxed, and they saw me cry very often in despair, and they just looked at me and didn't say anything. And I explained to them quite often that we were persecuted for no reason at all, that my father had worked with his bare hands from his youth on, and he was everything taken care of away from him, and he was persecuted now. They couldn't say much, but it must have sunk in somehow.
So you think they did these things feeling sorry for you when you left?
Right, personally.
Now, Were you a good cook? Did you know much about cooking?
No, I didn't know a thing about cooking. I was just forced into it because coming from Vienna, one expected everybody from Vienna know how to cook, which wasn't the truth in my case. And the lady of the house had a boyfriend who came from Vienna. She wanted to please him and to launch his art career, his artistic career, and thought Viennese cooking would help.
Was this a Jewish family?
Yes, it was a very Jewish family. And they had quite, I had to cook for guests. For instance, in the country estate, we had an 8-burner electric stove and a 6-burner gas stove, because if the one should give out, that half the other. I could put my own orders down with a very fine grocery store, Gristide. I remember all the names from years back. Don't ask me what I had for dinner last night. And she would only tell me how many there were for dinner. There would be 8 people, 10 people. But of course, I only had to take care of the kitchen. It was a butler and a maid for serving and for doing the good dishes. I only took care of the employees and the kitchen dishes. But I had also 3 dogs in the kitchen. I had to scrub the kitchen floor every night because of the dogs.
What was the name of the family again?
Yonkers, Ira Yonkers, Yonkers.
And the profession of Mr. Yonkers?
He was a broker. He never really told, but afterwards I put 2 and 2 together.
They lived where?
When they hired me, they lived in a 10-room apartment on Park Avenue. And they owned a beautiful estate in Elmsford, New York, near White Plains. And we spent the greater part of the year out there.
Did you ever have important or well-known guests for meals that you cooked for?
Yes, we did, since Mrs. Yonkers tried to launch her friend's career. He was a very well-known one of duo pianists in Europe. Since she wanted to launch his career, there were Vronsky Babin, I don't know if you remember them, duo pianists. Paul Vronsky and Babin, V-R-O-N-S-K-Y and Babin, B-A-B-I-N. Paul Robinson and Leinsdorf at the Metropolitan and other people on that order.
What was her friend's name? Is it somebody we would recognize?
I don't think he would, but an Austrian would. Robert Scholz, S-C-H-O-L-Z.
Did he ever make it?
As long as she remained his friend, this is an interesting story on the side. He decided to marry somebody then, and she even took the piano away from him that she had given him.
What was your husband doing while you were being a cook and living away from home?
He desperately looked for jobs, which at that time, being America being in a depression, that was the 40s, 1940 actually. He had a hard time. He worked, I think he volunteered for an organization called, I just found the papers upstairs, Notgemeinschaft Europäische Wissenschaftler. An association of European scientists.
Oh.
He worked with him. I think he volunteered, I can't remember, but he has some beautiful letters from that organization recommending him to anybody who would in any way, in any capacity, hire him. And later on, he got, through Mrs. Yonkers, a job as a night clerk, and bookkeeping he had to do at the same time, in a Summer Country Club in Beach Point, New York. And I saw him on Thursday afternoons, that being a cook's day out. I took the bus over there and we spent the afternoon together.
You stayed in this job for 13 months?
13 months.
Then what happened?
Then we didn't see any future in the way that our lives went. And considering the experience my husband had in the reporting, in the journalistic reporting business, we were told that Pittsburgh was a good city with three daily publications where we should try it. So we got on the bus and tried it. And a lady of the Quaker organization contacted us. Somebody else contacted us. I can't quickly think of the name. Can you stop it for a second?
Anytime you think of it, just mention it.
I wanted to mention the mayor that I couldn't think of the last time, the anti-Semitic mayor.
Yes, yes.
Karl Lueger. KARLLUEGER.
Very good.
Who is the director now of the movie thing in the Playhouse?
Director.
Excuse me. Yeah?
Is that perfectly all right?
Lou's starting that. Rauh. R-A-U-H. A well-known person. Wait a minute.
Oh, yes. Yes, certainly.
Mr. Richard Rauh, Sr. tried to see us one day in 1940 or 41, being an acquaintance or friend of that Dr. Bernard Cohn, who finally gave us an affidavit for my husband's parents, contacted us and left his calling card in the rooming house here in Pittsburgh. When we contacted him back, he said, oh, he was so upset, his wife just had a son, you know, the actors.
Oh, yes.
Just had a son and was so exciting, and he would contact us. Unfortunately, we never heard of him. But I know exactly when this Mr. Richard Rauh was born.
That was when you met Mrs. Cooper for the first time.
Yes, Mrs. Cooper, director of Kingsley House Settlement, after we had returned because of failure here in Pittsburgh to settle, we had returned to New York. And there she contacted me and offered me the job as a director of the Arts and Crafts Department in the settlement. And I got that after serving a volunteer session in New York and providing the reports to Mrs. Cooper.
Do you remember what your salary was as Arts and Crafts Director?
Yes, received a yearly contract of $1,500, which after a while was up to $1,700.
Do you have any idea how Mrs. Cooper found you?
Well, she invited, how she found us originally, I really don't know. I think the Quakers. The Quakers were a very active organization in Vienna. It was underground. But they came around to Jewish groups. They were Quakers mixed in the groups waiting in the Jewish community center, Israelitische Kultusgemeinde. And they said, even if we cannot help you get out, if you are strapped in financial ways, we'll help you. We'll give you money. Should you be able to get out and you don't have the money, we'll help you. And they did. They saved thousands of people, to be really just.
That's
to tell you. They helped many, many people, and I'll never forget that. I know I have a couple, that came from circumstances where they even couldn't pay their fare, not in Austin shillings, not in dollars. They were helped to come over here by the Quakers. Whether they were loans or gifts, I don't know.
That's very
interesting. But that was all that counted. Well, Mrs. Cuba came calling to us. We found a calling card, contacted her, and she invited us for one dinner at her settlement house, where we found about 28 people around the table, because they were residents for the field students in social work of Pitt. Carnegie at that time didn't have social work department. And we became acquainted with her, and she took us on a guided tour through the building, and my open mouth, I saw the arts and crafts, and I said, that's what I always love to do, and I know this, and I know how to do that. And I don't know what impressed her or not. And when we finally went back to New York, I received a letter from her offering me that position.
While you were here in these circumstances of looking for work, did any Jewish organizations contact you?
Never.
So, how much did it cost to get out of the...
I know what we paid for my parents. Each one-way ticket per person was $200. For our couple, we paid $400 for my parents. There was an incident. We had bought it on the Holland line. The Nazis invaded Holland. They couldn't go that way. We had to get our money back from the Holland line, which was very decent, and give us the money back. And we bought tickets on the Italian line. And they came on the last boat before Mussolini joined the war, on the last Italian boat. My husband's parents in 1941 came. There was the war on in the Atlantic already, and my husband's parents came on the last American boat, the Exeter, which was a commercial boat from Portugal. So they had to travel in a sealed wagon from Vienna, 3 days sitting in a sealed railroad car to get to Portugal, to board the ship.
Who signed an affidavit for their entry into America?
For my parents.
For your parents.
My parents. I heard a rumor that there was a man in New York who would sign affidavits, even. That story's out.